Hey, everybody. It is Monday, October 19th. Thanks for being with us here today on Education Talk Radio. My name's Larry Jacobs, and we have a really nice show for you this Monday morning. I live in Maine, as you know, so we're going to go all the way across the country to Arizona and talk to the superintendent of schools in Somerton, Arizona, a small district out there. I'm not sure you're Dr. Laura Noel, okay, is the superintendent out there. This is a district that's very interesting. Laura's going to talk to us about risk factors out there, how that affects education, things like poverty, that sort of thing. And, of course, we'll talk about how they're coming back to school in these pandemic times. And I got to thank my good friends over at Waterford Institute for introducing me to Laura. And it's going to be a nice show. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. Please go over there, read our magazine, which is called Equity and Access, because we are all about equity and access at our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Again, take the initials American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's our website, ace-ed.org. And I hope you go over there and join with us. It's free to join. We'll make sure you get the magazine each time it's published, which is six times a year. The current issue is up there now. It's the September issue, and we are going to have our November issue out in just a couple of weeks. So we're working on that one right now. So go over and enjoy what we're doing, and we want to make your voice heard. Join with us for equity at ace-ed.org. You can follow us over on Twitter at EduTalkRadio. On LinkedIn, it's Larry Jacobs. That's me. And on Facebook, it's both Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio. And without further ado, here we go out to Arizona, all the way from Maine. Laura, are you Dr. Noel?
I am. They call me Dr. Noel. But if I can call you Larry, you can call me Laura. That would be good for me.
I'm going to call you Laura, and thank you very much. And I thought you were a doctor, but I wasn't sure as I said it before. So it's a pleasure to have you here, Laura. How's the weather in Somerton?
Thank you.
My pleasure.
It's beautiful. It's finally starting to cool off. It's been so warm, and so it's just starting to be cool in the early mornings and the late evenings. It's here. It's only 7:30, so we're opening the windows and got cool air coming in.
Great. Great. And where is Somerton in relation to the Phoenix and Tucson, sort of thing?
I knew you were on the East Coast, so when you said Maine, I'm thinking, wow, we're exactly kitty-corner across the United States. So
we sure
are. We are the most south and west that you can get in the United States. So we're right on the border, in the little corner where Mexico and California and Arizona come together.
Wow, that's cool. I got to tell you, is it all desert out there? What's it look like?
Yeah, just desert. There are different types of desert. In the Somerton area, it's mostly farmland, so everything's been turned to farm. So it's not real rocky. It's kind of a sandy, loose soil, just a open, flat desert with the purple, blue-colored mountains in the background along the skyline. And it's as far south and west as you can get. So
That's amazing.
We actually have Mexico on both our west and our south side. If you get out your old school map and
I'm going to be checking this out. Okay, and you know what's interesting about
California.
I live in southwestern Maine, but they call Maine part of Maine down east. And if you go to Lubeck, Maine, okay, that's the first place where the sun comes up on the United States. So that's about 4 hours from here. So literally, we are catty corner from each other.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Isn't that funny?
It's just amazing. Wow, that's just good. Are you from there?
Yes, I've been. I was born here in Arizona, and I've lived in a couple different areas in Arizona. And for the last 30 years, we've been here in this Yuma, Somerton, San Luis, this area here.
Well, see, you're right by Yuma. And I always invite you to Maine, but I'm telling you, you lived in Arizona your whole life. Don't come in January, February, March, or even April. Okay? You'll hate it. Right?
We have a lot of winter visitors who come to our area, and they warn us about going up north in the winter.
Oh, yeah. You'd absolutely hate it. But it's really kind of fun just to talk about that. Of course, I'd hate being. What's the temperature in the summer? I have to ask that question.
Well, we get to the 120 to 123 sometimes. But most the problem is that mostly it's like 110 day and night. That's the problem.
Wow.
It gets
yeah.
way high, but the problem is it gets hot and then it stays hot day and night. It gets so hot that you feel the heat coming from the ground during the night
wow.
because it's warmed up during the day. And so it just doesn't cool off. And that's what gets merciless, which I've heard that's the same thing with the cold. It's
exactly.
just all the
exactly.
time. It's no break up.
Exactly.
It's no time.
It's the exact opposite. We are literally
yeah.
catty corner. We are literally catty
yeah.
corner in climate
yeah,
and in direction and all that. That's just amazing. And how long have you been superintendent in Somerton?
I've been in Somerton for 6 years, and then I was in a nearby district for 19 years. So I've been
wow.
in this area for a long time.
Were you and, superintendent at that nearby district?
Yes, I've been a superintendent for, I'm getting close to 30 years now, at 26 years. Yeah.
You know, I was going to say you just surprised me because your voice sounds very young. I got to tell you.
Oh,
it
yes.
lovely.
I'm really very young. I'm very young.
I'm sure you are. Of course, you started being a superintendent when you were 7. I know that.
That's
I figured
it.
That out already.
That is,
yeah.
Actually,
right.
I just turned 60. I just had my 60th birthday. I feel kind of proud of
oh,
that.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Right. That
hey,
is great.
What?
And they're lucky to have you there. I got to tell you, it's just really, wow. It's just an incredible difference. And describe, if you can. Okay, we're going to get into mm-hmm. some of these things you're experiencing in both these districts that you worked in, okay, but and you're working in right now. But describe the school district. And I don't know if I read correctly, there's no high school in Somerton. You must go to a regional high. Am I correct?
Right. In our area, we have so many schools that are kind of it's kind of spread out. It's not like a, you know, the city isn't like a city where everything's together. It's kind of spread around. And so the schools are spreading out, you know, out within where the people are living. And so for high school, where you gather so many students into one school, our high schools are actually countywide. So we have one high school district that has, I think it's 8 high schools. So those high
oh,
schools
wow.
are spread all around. And so we do have a high school scheduled to be built actually in Somerton
wow.
because our population has been growing. So the high school district, though, is a separate district, and they are they have
ah.
land and are beginning to work it. So we're hoping in the next couple of years to actually have one of those high schools be in our Somerton city. So
wow.
right now the kids travel about 30 minutes to the high school that's nearest to them.
Cool. That is cool. And all that said, it sounds like the district, you just said it, is very spread out. All right.
Well,
I want you to describe the district, but it must be go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Our particular district is not real spread out. It's a because
ah.
Somerton itself is like about a 2 mile square area. So we have 3,000 students in 5 schools within that area. It's and the reason it's like that is because we're surrounded by farmland. And so farmers do not want people moving out into the land that they're farming. So they've kept the city condensed, you know, kind of together, and then all around us, surrounding us, is big farms, lots of vegetables and crops, all kinds of things going on. Farming is a huge business in our area, and very well-educated, smart, well-income farmers, because these are farmers that can do 3
mm-hmm.
crops on a field, 4 crops on a field a year, and they're doing the big vegetable crops and those things that can really pull in quite a bit of money for them. So it's big, big agribusiness is big here. And
I'm sure.
it's that we have kids are using electronics and technology and there's STEM science. All of that stuff is being used in all of these fields. So it's a high-tech business. I thought when I moved to this area, I came from originally, when I first moved here, I was in Southern California and moved over for a teaching job. And when I did, I came to the community and I thought, oh, this is a lot of farmland. I'm probably low educated, probably
right.
kids that don't have
yeah.
a lot of exposure and knowledge.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I go to a restaurant and I'm talking to this board member and a phone rings. And that was in the days when not very many people had cell phones. I didn't have one at that time. And all of a sudden, a phone rings, and then all these people in the restaurant are pulling out these big. Remember when the devices were real big, like with
yeah,
the big
antennas?
Yeah,
of course.
I'm going,
wow.
What in the world? Well, the restaurant was full of farmers taking a break for lunch, different people working out on the farm. And they were at that time, that was the techno-savvy thing to have, you know, cell phones. And I'm thinking, these are not your average farmer like you think of farming. This is a different thing. And that was when the board member coached me on the millions of dollars that they make in these family, some of them are, most of them are family-owned farms that are, you know, have gone for generations. They actually created their own water district in order to serve themselves. I mean, their own power company to serve themselves. So it's no little thing. And a lot of very smart, well-educated people running big business in the area. But it's all surrounding then the city. So in Somerton, we have this 2-mile-square city. And then we have a kind of a bedroom community. People come and they're up and coming. They want inexpensive housing for their family, but they work in Yuma or in the surrounding agribusiness. So most of the jobs are out away from the town. So the town is like lots of houses, neighborhoods, all different kinds of neighborhoods, but very affordable housing. So your average, you could have a custodian and a teacher who have a family of three, and they can have a very nice home on a neighborhood street. Your average working class person raising a family and working usually just outside Somerton. And so usually they're second or third generation from Mexico. We have very few first generation from Mexico in our community. It just happens because first generation often can't afford a home. They're often living apartment style or temporary style. So our community is more those people who have like a second or third generation, but we have a strong language delay for our students entering school because many of those families are multi-generational homes that mm-hmm. are having grandma watch the kids, and grandma speaks only Spanish to them. So they have some exposure to English from mom and dad, but most of the language they're actually using is grandma's language, which is the Spanish. So about 80-90% of our kids are identified as second language learners when they enter kindergarten. And by third grade, we're down to between 30 and 40%. So we try to go real hard. We try to get them quickly into the English as fast as we can.
Let me jump on that for a second, because that's actually what we love talking about, and I hope you heard me say it, which is about equity. Okay, and you know that second ESL is a real equity issue across the country, and I'm curious, okay, how you move the kids along so quickly? All right, in I assume pre-K, K grades 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
How do you do that? This is actually you're targeted right in there, and you've got to make that happen.
Except
I'm sure the community.
You mentioned the word equity, right? Equity.
Yes, I did.
So a lot of people do interpret then the language problem as the equity issue. And there is something to that in the initial part. But I really think there's a bigger equity issue that makes your children in Maine and our children in Arizona the same, have the same problem, and that is poverty. So
You said you're in if I heard it correctly, a pretty strong middle-class area. Did I misunderstand that?
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. So the issue with poverty is the mindset, not the actual. So you can be one, two, three generations away from actually being in poverty, but your family and the people in your family can still be living with a poverty attitude, a low self-efficacy. Have you heard of self-efficacy? That word self-efficacy describes that you feel like you can do things. Like if I have self-efficacy and I go to make scrambled eggs, but I decide I'm going to change up the recipe and put something different in it, I know I can still make really good scrambled eggs. And I'll take a chance with adding a little cream cheese just to see what it tastes like. Self-efficacy is where you believe that you can, and so you try. And what ends up happening is you do. You believe you can, so you try and you do. So a lot of kids who are raised in this mindset of poverty, they have this lack of self-efficacy. They think everything's controlled by fate. It just accidentally happened. Just this happened, that happened. They don't recognize, even when they do it themselves, when they see that by their effort they accomplished something, they say, "Oh, I was lucky," or they'll put the belief on the person who helped them. They'll say, "Well, it was my aunt who taught me to read." Well, if the aunt is wise, what she will do is say, "No, you taught yourself to read. You listened to me and you followed my direction, and that it took your effort to make that happen. So you accomplished this goal." And we create this problem with self-efficacy by the way we talk, and by the way we reward. We provide extrinsic rewards for things that don't have extrinsic rewards. You shouldn't have extrinsic rewards. They should have the reward of knowing you did a good job. So when my granddaughter cleans up the toys, I don't say, "Oh, you did such a great job of cleaning up the toys. Here's a piece of candy." No, I pull her to me and I say, "Look at this room. You really did a great job of cleaning that up. You are a really strong and capable little girl, aren't you?" You know, that's a different, it's a different mindset. And poverty makes you feel that everything is by chance. It's just you lucky this, lucky that, and by chance whatever happened. So that's the enemy of self-efficacy. And that's what we can give kids in Maine or in Arizona is hope and belief that they can. And the kids who are learning a second language, they can feel especially hopeless because they can feel like, "How am I ever going to learn this? I don't understand anything that's going on." And so it's difficult, especially, and if you can get them early, the better, because they haven't, early on, they don't know, they feel like they don't know anything anyway. But later, they start feeling ashamed that they don't know the language.
I have to ask, wait a minute, it's Somerton. I'm getting the impression, I may be wrong here, is most of the population Latino, Latinx, whatever you want to say that?
97%.
Okay, that's wonderful. So my question is, do the children, with the high population of Latino folks there, do the children understand the need to speak English? Do they get that? Or do they feel like, because you're surrounded by, you're in the United States, but you're surrounded basically by Mexico, okay, you know, which is a Spanish-speaking nation, okay? So do they see the need that there's a wider world out there, they must speak English? I'm just curious. It's interesting.
Yes, desperately so, to a point of anxiety.
Wow.
They feel desperate to learn the language quickly because they realize that the smart people, the ones who are what they vision as smart, who have the good jobs, they're the ones who know English. You gotta know English. Gotta know English to go to college. Gotta know English to get a good job. And what's great, what's hard is what we focus on is saying, we want you to know both languages. We can only teach you English. So we'll do the job of teaching you English. And I say to parents, please continue to teach them Spanish because what would be best is for them to be translators and be able to, you know, that would be great.
Be bilingual.
Be
bilingual, which is fabulous. Okay, you talk about being able to get great opportunity, etc. You don't want to lose that part of it, but at the same time, you need to emphasize to the children that there's a much wider world out there, and I'm sure they see that on TV.
Well,
okay,
most families insist they learn the English, and they'll quit speaking Spanish to the kids. But that the problem with that is then they don't grow in Spanish. So they have a baby language in Spanish, and then their real words, the words they're learning that mature with them, are their English words. And that creates a barrier in their family. They get to where they can't really talk to their family about the things that are most meaningful to them because they just don't have the words to express it to them.
But let me ask, not grandma maybe, but mom and dad, okay?
Yeah.
They've lived there for a while. Don't they speak English very, very well? Mom and
mostly English.
Yeah.
For the most case, I would say maybe 40% are a total Spanish household. But for the most case, the 50% of the kids, they have parents who are speaking English or speak both languages.
Yeah.
And they're being raised, so
they're
being child care and all that's being provided by grandma and relatives. And they're the ones that are speaking only Spanish to them. So when we get them in early on, that's the first thing we do is really focus on getting those English skills going. And then from there, the problem is getting them to keep growing their Spanish along with their English, which is why we need to encourage mom and dad to have more conversation and talk with them, help them to learn those words in both languages.
And do the schools, and again, you're having, you know, I'm talking about the high schools too, which you have some influence over, do they encourage the bilingualism, which I believe is very important? Okay,
no,
do they encourage
it? In Arizona, the state has taken a real strong stance that, you know, we have to really focus on getting the English language mastered. And so at one time, we were actually barred from teaching Spanish unless it was being taught as a second
language.
Yeah,
I remember that. That wasn't that long ago, if I remember. Yeah.
And now they've kind of eased up a little bit on that, where they've allowed a few dual language programs, which we really enjoy. Now our software, like Waterford and some of those other software programs,
great stuff.
Early kids, what they end up doing is teaching the adults as well as the kids, and that's helpful because grandma learns what things are called in English, you know, and she can at least use that early, those early words. So then our trick is to make sure and let grandma know, let the family know that it's good for the kids to learn both languages. But actually, what our real message is to them is that they need to have I believe you can. In our community, the kids come to school with it doesn't matter how much money they have, they will be clean, their hair will be combed, and whatever the best clothes they have, they will be wearing. And they are ready for school. Now, they may wear that same outfit every day because grandma will wash it every evening for them. But they come ready for school. Unless they have a problem, what we have found is that the mindset of our community used to be, some things have changed, used to be, well, I'll just get them to school and they would, it was kind of a harsh thing. Now, you get to school and you learn because you've got to make something of yourself because you're going to get a good job, you know, and kind of a fearful kind of thing, setting them off to school. Well, they were eager to learn, but what if they had, say, dyslexia? Or what if they had a learning problem of some kind where they struggle? Well, then the family would, like, give up on them. well, they're not meant for school. They'll just have to work hard. And so then all of a sudden the focus would change to being a worker and not developing their mind. So we've had to really work through that. And because all of our teachers come from the same area, they have the same problem. They have the same problem in their mind of not really believing that their little kids, poor Pablocito, their poor little kids, that they can't do it. So when I talk about self-efficacy, I find that to be a central concept for the adults and the kids to really believe they can. Because if you don't believe you can, you don't even try. You don't even make the attempt. And when you do make it happen, you don't really think it can repeat because you don't really believe you had anything to do with making it happen. The teacher just liked you or the teacher did not like you. You don't see it as something that you did. You see just that teacher to blame or someone else to blame. But the teachers are doing the same thing. They're saying, well, how can our kids achieve? Like the state test comes and, oh, well, we can't. Yeah, we've never been able to do well. Well, 6 years ago, I challenged that when I first came to this district. I said, look, are you telling me then, is there any Hispanic kid in the state of Arizona that has passed this test? Well, I'm sure there is somewhere. And I said, yeah, let's look at some data. Okay, look, over here in this district that's, you know, about 100 miles away from us, they have a group of kids who actually are performing at an average level on the state test. We're scoring 20% below, which is the state average for Hispanic population scores 20% below the rest of the population on standardized tests. So you're telling me that they have some magic over here in Vail School District that we don't have? How come their brown kids can do it and our brown kids cannot? And they just looked at me like, did you really say that? Because I'm a white face. So anyway, and I said, well, I'm just asking. If brown kids over there can do it, then why can't our brown kids? And you could just like see them change a position in their seat about how uncomfortable they got. And I said, I think that we should at least have some of our kids able to do that. So
right.
where are the some? Well, we have some good readers. So I challenged the principals. I said, show me, which grade level do you know the best? So one of the teachers says fourth grade. I say, okay, fourth grade, you know the kids the best at fourth grade. Tell me who are your really great readers, the ones who read chapter books and are really fluent in their reading and their language skills and are really great. So they name off 10 kids. Then I pull out the standardized test and I say, so what did they score? They scored average. They scored green, what we call green. They were good. They were, you know, passing. I said,
right.
Where are the blue? In this grade level, there's no blue. In other words, high. There's no kid that's high. So where are the high kids? And they just look at me with a blank look. I said, you said that these 9 kids you named could read chapter books. Well, why aren't they scoring well? So what
right.
ended up happening is they began going back and asking that question, where are our high kids? Where are the blue kids? Why aren't they scoring blue? Why aren't some of our kids? Let's pretend we think most of the kids can't, but aren't there some? And so they began looking through and finding out the mistakes they were making. So we were taking a class of kids, and a class would have a wide range of abilities, and our teachers were delivering the instruction to the low end because they believed our kids were
mm-hmm.
low. They believed
That's right.
our kids were low, and they
That's
couldn't
exact.
Do that well, so they were focusing on the low end, and there were
you know what
kids
it is?
That were high.
I got to tell you, I have seen this before talking about equity. Okay, and it's basically, and I hate to say this, but it's a kind of an implicit bias, okay? And I just saw a
the
survey.
Mindset.
Yeah, it is. But it's not intentional, but it's
no,
there.
No.
It's resting there.
Right.
Okay, it's subliminal.
Yes.
And I just saw a interesting survey where the kids who went to pre-K, okay,
mm-hmm.
in a given district were doing very, very well. Okay, but the
mm-hmm.
kids were, and when school started, they were way, way ahead of the kids who did not
mm-hmm.
have pre-K. But as the
right.
year went by, the pre-K,
yes.
the non-pre-K kids caught up, and
yes.
at the end, they were
yes.
all equal. The point of the
yes.
survey was that the pre-K at the end didn't really
uh-huh.
matter that much because the teachers were teaching to the kids who didn't have the
exactly.
pre-K.
They
it's
were
it's the same thing
low.
You're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah.
They were equally low. So, and that's what we found. So one of the examples I used is, let's say I said to the teachers, if you're at your house and one of the kids has turned on the hose and brought the hose in the house and the hose is on in your house, a hose is in your house. The kids are running around, Mom, Mom, the hose is on the house. What do? Do you get a bunch of sheets? Get some sheets, get some towels, let's wipe up this water. Is that what you do? No. You say, turn off the hose.
yeah.
And I said, you know, yeah. the school system, we have kids who are coming in, and we're not turning off the hose. We need to quit
yeah.
having the kids come in to us low. But then once they are with us, and once we have the kids in, we need to be bringing them up, not letting them fall back down. We keep getting out the interventions and the low-end stuff, and we're applying that low-end mentality to everybody. Well, my feeling is that if a child could be blue, let's say, and we're not
yeah.
providing
blue is good. Blue is good.
Blue
is
yeah,
good.
Yeah, if we're not allowing them to be blue, then we need an intervention for our blue kids. Where's that intervention group? There should be a group for if you're going to have small groups that fit kids' levels, then you ought to have levels at the high level also. But the biggest change we tested 2 kindergarten programs. And in one kindergarten program, we have the state standard that says they can skip count up to 100 by the end of kindergarten. I believe that's right. Skip count to 100 by the end of kindergarten. So we had 2 different curriculums. And one curriculum broke that up and said, okay, for first quarter, they'll practice from 0 to 20. Second quarter, from 21 to 40. And, you know, broke it up evenly so that by the end of the year, they could skip count to 100. The other program started at the very first quarter from 0 to 100, giving examples all the way through, but they only tested the 0 to 20. So the teachers practiced mostly the 0 to 20. But in the one program, they never even talked about anything over 20. They just practiced from 0 to 20. In the other lesson, the teacher would say, well, if I say 9, what comes next? And you say 10, 11, 12. Oh, that's good. What if we say, and they practice that. But then they would say, what if I said 41? You know, and wouldn't even have him write it down, just did it out loud, like broke the barrier of how far you could go, just out loud without even any accountability or measurement. The kids in the program that opened up that top end, that allowed the kid who actually had the ability to think of that but never had been offered the opportunity, that group scored twice as well as the group on the other curriculum that parsed it out in very, you know, mechanized kind of increments over the year. We have kids in our system, and when we allow them to even think of it, when we give them the possibility, well, what if I said 41, then what would you say? And we let them even aspire to that. Those kids pull the whole group up. Then that kid who never even thought of it, when you asked the question, didn't think of it, but as soon as that other kid said the answer, they went, oh, yeah, that's right. And now you've pulled up two kids at a time. And we found by opening the top end, by believing that our kids could do it, we, all of a sudden, we were achieving first. We began to achieve higher than the Hispanic population in our state, which was huge for Somerton. Somerton had always been low, D-level schools, C and D schools. They were proud when they got a C school. And they were seeing, we were seeing our kids score like close to the state level, like 10% below. Wow. You know, and we, by continuing this kind of thinking as we moved along, every year we made gains and gains. Another thing we did is we looked for outliers. Outliers means finding kids like your kids, so that you don't have any feeling like it's, you know, somebody that you don't know. Kids like your kids who can do it. And then asking you the question, yourself the question, what are they doing? How come that kid can? So what is it we can do that's happening there? So we had a fifth grade math class that scored higher than all the other fifth grade math classes in our district. And so we said, why? We started going to that room, asking the teacher. The teacher didn't know what she was doing that was any different. The principals went. They couldn't figure out anything she was doing that was any different than the strategies being used everywhere. We brought a group of teachers in. Do you know what we finally figured out that that classroom was doing? She knew every single student exactly where they were in math. She knew what they could do and what they couldn't do. You could name any student to her, and she could tell you exactly where they were at that moment in time. And she kept current on it. She always knew what things they were struggling with, what was next for them. She would call the parents. She developed homework packets that were individualized for every student. Then she would call the parents to make sure the parents knew how to do it, because they were going to have to help the child at home. And she would, she knew that was the only thing different she was doing, was that she learned where every child was and challenged each one at their own level. So our whole fifth grade replicated that, and our whole fifth grade scored higher than the state on math, because our whole fifth grade copied that kind of mentality. We learned how to use, we don't have very many resources, but we found an instructional program like Waterford, programs like that, that would give us a good price for a high-quality product. Now that teacher uses a product that can actually individualize that homework, because the program will make sure the student is working at their level, at the place where they're having difficulty. And so,
and that's, and actually, if I may, I just want to say that is actually what you just said is the definition of equity. Okay, where you give each kid what they need. It's not one size fits all. That's equality. Okay, but equity is where you see what each kid needs. Obviously, that teacher you were just talking about, and you prepare things according to that for that child, and that makes all the difference again in the world for kids.
But teachers have not been taught that way, and they need to learn that.
That's right.
You're exactly right, and that's where we've had to redefine the term. For some reason, in our culture, we get this impression that equity means that you go and you provide for everyone. You don't provide for them. You bring them along. So people have to learn that self-efficacy. And they only learn it by being able to try it and being able to do it. And if we don't give them a chance to try it and then teach them how to fail so that they can succeed, they're going to have hard knocks. But somebody's got to be there coaching them along. You can't provide everything for them. Some people in our culture have this idea that equity means that if one person doesn't have a job and another person has a job, well, then that's an equity issue, so we just need to give the person a job. No, we need to equip the person who doesn't have a job to work.
Hear, hear. I couldn't agree with you more. Okay? That's what it's all about. I'll tell you something else, and you made this point, although you didn't say it the same way. When you teach down to kids, you're going to hurt them. Okay? You think you're helping them. Okay? But
yes.
You're not. All right? The key to kids are amazing, and if you have a rigorous curriculum, a curriculum that is constantly challenging these kids, again, at their own level, okay, you are going to see that these kids will rise up, okay?
Yes.
A rising tide raises all boats, so to speak, okay? And it's the rigorous curriculum as opposed to the simple curriculum that makes all the difference. And this happens not just in Somerton. This happens everywhere.
Yes.
All right?
It's
that, that is a mindset that has
it's
to change.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. What you're doing down there is amazing. I'm going to call you or email you a little bit later, Laura. I would love to have you write up an article in our magazine because we reach a lot of people, and I'd love to have you do that. Would you mind doing that?
Sure. No, I wouldn't mind doing it.
I would love it. You've got a great voice. You are just amazing.
We have the cycle going where we get kids to the level, then they fall back, level, fall back, level, fall back. And that's because we're intervening only at low levels instead of recognizing that equity then is true for everyone. If we understand equity, we're providing it for all the kids. So once blue, always blue. Once green, always green or blue.
I love it.
Once they're yellow, they never go back to red. Never. We never go back. We always are moving forward or staying
moving
the
forward.
Same. Because it could be that a child's capacity is at that yellow level or at the green level. That is possible. That happens. There should be a spread. But there should not be all the kids in red. That's impossible. That means there's something wrong.
You just said it, and in that case, there's something wrong with the way we're educating, not something wrong with the kids.
Right.
I hate to do this.
Right.
We're running out of time. We got to go. Okay, I could listen to you. You're really somebody special. I got to tell you, job you're doing and the thought you put into it is unbelievable. I'm going to get in touch with you. I really enjoyed talking to you today. This is great.
Sure. Fun.
Okay?
Sounds good. Keep doing the good work.
Well, you keep doing the good work. You are amazing, and I hope everything's going all right with COVID down there.
Yeah,
got a minute.
Doing
okay, everybody?
We're doing all right. You know, and by the way, we have now 3 A schools, a B school, and a C school. Before, we had D's and sometimes a C. So just so you know, things are much better, and now the trick is to keep it going, keep moving on.
Yeah, nothing
and
surprises
even in
me
COVID,
the way the person they got for superintendent, you got a leader down there. That's you, Laura. Thank you so much.
Oh,
really.
Thank you.
Okay,
so much.
I'll be in touch. So
okay.
Thank you. Okay, have a great
thank
day.
You.
It's early in the day down there, so I hope it cools off for you, okay?
Yeah, it's cool so far.
Thank God.
Thanks.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a great superintendent. Thank you, Laura. Laura Noel is superintendent in Somerton, Arizona, and, well, that's all I can say. Wow. All right. Wow. Love that show. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Waterford, for introducing me to Laura. What a great person. All right. I hope she does write for us in the magazine at some point. It's, the magazine's Equity and Access. It's over on site at a-ed.org. And check it out. We have great, great stories like this, and I'd like to follow up on this some more. So thanks, Laura. Just great stuff. We're going to archive the show over there at ace-ed.org. Again, thanks to my friends at Waterford for introducing me to this amazing person. And we'll get on with it, okay? My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We got to go, so thanks for listening.